You're listening to Louisiana Insider, a superlative guide to a great state's destinations, hosted by Errol Labor, executive editor of Louisiana Life magazine.
It's our Louisiana song. It's our favorite melody. It's our Louisiana song. Hearing it echo through the cypress tree.
We have a really interesting topic today. It's about Tigers, and not any Tigers, but the Tigers who have worn the title of Mike the Tigers, a beloved part of the LSU tradition. I got to tell you, with me is David G. Baker, who worked at LSU for several years, who's a veterinarian by trade. Now he's in Nebraska, but he knows a lot about the history of the Tiger and the taking care of it. And it's a fascinating story. And when I first saw the book, I said, I guess it's about LSU football. Well, no, it's about the Tigers. And there have been, how many Mikes have there been over the years now?
Officially seven, but there were two Mike the Seconds, but we still say there have been seven. Really, there's been eight, but officially seven.
And looking through the book, the book is called Mike the Tigers of LSU. And the book is now, it's out now, I assume.
Yes.
Bookstores and probably on websites. It's a good read, and it's really got great photography in it too, and so it's really interesting. And I learned a lot about Tigers just going through it. Let me begin though. The first question everybody's mind, and I'm sure you hear it all the time: is it good to have like a tiger on the campus? How do you respond to that?
Well, there's a whole section at the end of the book called Should LSU Have a Tiger on Campus?
Yeah.
And people have different views of that. Of course, some people say that no animal should be held in captivity ever, including pet animals. That's sort of an extreme view. Yeah. Other people recognize that, you know, the wild is gone to a large degree. There is no wild left for these tigers. And so if we're going to conserve them and preserve them, that's going to be in captivity. So that's fine for zoos and nature parks, but should a tiger be on a campus? And in the book, I describe several reasons that I give. No one in particular justifies keeping the tiger on the campus, but several reasons that I give why I think that having Mike, the tiger, on the LSU campus is a good thing. For one thing, my observation is that I feel that people can actually see, smell, hear a tiger, and recognize that tigers are endangered. The whole concept of endangerment becomes more real to them. This isn't just an abstract or a picture. This is a real tiger. And my observation over the 26 years I had of taking care of Mike the Tiger was that the realization and the reality of a tiger makes people in the LSU community better stewards of the resources we have on this planet. So I think that's a good thing. I think that the undergraduates and the veterinary students learn about conservation issues. The veterinary students learn about tiger medicine. There's a number of things I think that justify having a tiger on campus, in addition to just the spirit that he, you know, the rah-rah value, if you will, that he brings to the athletic program.
Now, tigers are native of India. Is that correct?
Mostly, yeah. India, Nepal, Cambodia, Laos. 100 years ago, they ranged all the way up into Afghanistan. So their range is just a fraction of what it used to be.
Is there any place where they're in the wild now?
There are some still in Asia. In India and Nepal, very few. It's thought that there probably are about 3,500 tigers in the wild in the world. And 100 years ago, that was well over 100,000. Yeah. So most of the tigers have been poached out of the wild or have just lost so much habitat space that they just can't survive.
And if it's beautiful animals, aren't they? They just
The tiger is the most illustrated animal in world art history.
What is their worst predator?
Man.
Okay.
And we are their only predator.
All right.
they're at the top of the food chain. Nobody preys on a tiger except people.
Yeah. And either people just want to go hunting and have like a stuffed tiger somewhere.
Well, that's part of it, but it's mostly habitat loss. I mean, people need to live somewhere. They need to take down forests to plant crops. And so it's mostly habitat loss. And the, you know, there comes a point where the number of tigers drops below a certain threshold, and their populations are so scattered that they just simply don't run into one another to breed. And there's just not enough of them out there. And so then that population of tigers in that area, you know, dies off.
Now, actually, I learned this from your book. They tend to be solitary animals, that they don't really travel around like in groups.
Absolutely. There are only two cat species that live socially, the lion and the cheetah. And what do those two have in common? Well, they're both in Africa, and they both live out on open plains where it's very difficult to ambush your lunch. So they have to hunt cooperatively in order to eat. All other cats live, except for domestic house cats, which I'll comment on in a minute, live in jungle areas, and they are ambush hunters. And if you're going to ambush your lunch, you don't want anybody else around to scare it off. So all other cats are solitary. They do not live together. They only get together to breed. Now, what about domestic cats? They come from the deserts of Saudi Arabia originally. And I would suggest that even though there's no trees, there's a lot of hiding spots in sand dunes. And so domestic cats are ambush hunters too. Now, they can live together in your house. I mean, I know several people that have multiple cats, and they can learn to do that. But naturally, even domestic cats are solitary animals. So breeding tigers is
wild on his everyday life, is just out there all alone.
Well, yeah. Yeah. They, biologists putting radio tracking collars on tigers have demonstrated that the males especially will travel between 8 and 40 miles a day, just patrolling their range. And there might be 5 to 7 female tigers who overlap that male's range, but they don't get together unless they're going to breed. They know one another are there because they leave scent markings and scratch markings, but they live alone. Yes.
And how
because
often?
Because they're ambush hunters.
Okay. And who is their main prey? Who do they go after the most?
It's mostly hoofstock. So deer type animals, buffalo, things like that, and pigs. That's mostly what they eat. They'll eat a number of things. They'll eat birds too, but it's mostly ungulates, hoofstock, and pigs.
Yeah. So a typical day of a tiger anywhere is kind of a lonely day. They're just out there on their own.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't describe it as lonely. If you like living alone, then you don't really feel alone. You don't feel lonely. I mean, that's just normal to them.
Yeah.
But, you know, they sleep about 16 hours a day. So their day really isn't very long.
Yeah. Do tigers dream?
Yeah, I'm sure they do. I've watched our tigers and just the way they, some of their motions, their movements when they're asleep, they're obviously, their brain's working. They're thinking about something. I don't know what's in there, but they're thinking about something.
Okay. Well, in your book, you have, again, I want to urge anybody to get this book. It's really interesting. But you do a chapter, it's chapter 4, and it's really questions about tigers. You know, mm-hmm. I'd like to take some of those questions and just pose them to you, all right?
Sure. Yeah, the reason I wrote that is that for many years, when I first became the veterinarian for Mike the Tiger, I was repeatedly asked the same questions over and over and over. And so in our, you know, this is the fourth edition of our Mike the Tiger book. So starting with the first edition, we tried to address some of those questions, mostly so that I wouldn't have to answer them so many times.
Well, if you could deal with doing that one more time on the pre-show.
Certainly. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And these are questions I'd ask too, you know, if you and I were
sure.
Aware of that. They're actually questions about Mike the Tiger. And remember, there have been 7 different Mike the Tiger. Let me digress for a moment. The Mike the Tigers that have been on the LSU campus, where have they come from?
Yeah, in the book, I describe where each one of them came from. It's been a variety of sources. Most of them now come from what I would call these sort of roadside exhibits, or you can call them a sanctuary, but somebody ends up with an exotic animal, and the federal government discovers that, and the federal government, like a mountain lion, for example, the federal government will confiscate other mountain lions or carnivores, dangerous carnivores, from people that shouldn't have them, and they have no place to put them. There's no government facilities, and so they're aware of these people. So they'll say, "Hey, would you? We've got a tiger here. Would you take it?" And so they'll add on to their facility, build another enclosure, and now they've got a mountain lion and a tiger. And then the next time the government discovers one that shouldn't belong or is poorly cared for, they'll confiscate it, and they'll say, "Hey, would you take this one too?" And eventually these people end up with 50, 60, 70 of these dangerous carnivores. The government provides no financial support for their care. And so so they're living off of donations. And so they often will end up in some regulatory trouble because they can't provide enough food, they can't provide the right veterinary care, enclosures, or whatever. And so they end up having to find a home for some of their animals. So that's where we have found the past several tigers, from these so-called sanctuaries that just need to downsize. And they need a place where their tiger can have a good home. And that's what we've done. We do not take tigers from zoos, and we do not take tigers from breeders. We do not want to contribute to the irresponsible breeding of tigers in the U.S. So we take tigers that need a home.
Zoos, do you consider to be irresponsible with their breeding? Or
No, absolutely not. Most zoos participate in the what's called the Species Survival Plan, which is an international effort to conserve the genetic health of individual species of animals. And the very first Species Survival Plan developed in the 1970s was for the tiger. And so even the Baton Rouge Zoo participates in the Species Survival Plan for one of the subspecies of tigers. No, they take excellent care of their tigers. But those are pedigreed tigers. They're in this breeding program. That's not the kind of tiger they want to donate or place at a university. And also zoos have to be, as municipal agencies, they have to be very careful about public perception. And because not everybody agrees with a university having a tiger, it would be very, very difficult to find a zoo that would be willing to donate one of their tigers to a university. Whereas these sanctuaries, they need places to put their animals. So they are quite happy to donate a tiger to LSU.
What does, before I get to those questions, what does Mike's, if I can call him Mike, okay.
That's his name.
Okay. What does Mike's habitat look like at LSU?
It's a roughly 15,000 square foot enclosure. It's got an indoor night house with two lounging areas, platforms that he can get up on at night. He has a wood chip bed that he likes to lay in. It's got water supplies. It's got a air conditioner, heater. It's very well kept. There's a squeeze chute and a scale in the facility so that he can be weighed at any time. His yard consists of a grassy area. There's a waterfall, a stream, and there's little weirs or dams moving up that stream so he can lay in that on hot days. There's a swimming pool at the bottom. And when that was being built, we were very careful to make that pool deep enough so that up against the glass where people can watch him, it's deep enough so he can actually come off the bottom of it and swim if he chooses to along in front of the glass. There's somewhere in the enclosure all day, every day of the year, where he can get out of the weather. I had established standard operating procedures so that if the temperature gets below 40 degrees and it's cold rain or snowing, we go open the door to the night house and he can come in during the day. He rarely did so. The tiger is brought in at night so that he's not out there for anybody to fool with at night. So he's brought in. He's only fed if he comes in at night. And since he likes to eat, he comes in at night, and then he's locked inside at night, so he's safe. And then he's released again the next morning after the enclosure is cleaned and made sure that everything is secure.
And you have a staff, and you have students that take care of them, don't they?
Yes, of course, I'm not there now, but his current veterinarian has two veterinary students that, and this team I selected last year. They're selected at the end of their second year of veterinary school. They go through a four-month apprenticeship training program with the outgoing students. Then when the outgoing students graduate in May as veterinarians, then the two new students, now entering their third year of veterinary school, they become Mike the Tiger's caretakers, and they do that job every day for 2 years.
Do you think there's any recognition, like the Mike the Tiger? Which Mike the Tiger did you take care of?
5, 6, and 7.
5, 6, 7. Do you think that there was some kind of recognition of you? Like,
there's absolutely no question that there was. They're very intelligent animals. Mike 6 figured out who I was in less than 24 hours.
And then how did he react to you?
He'll chuff. Tigers make four sounds, and one of them is a chuff. It's technically called a Preston, but we call it a chuff. It's a happy sound of greeting. And so when the tiger sees someone that he knows and likes, he'll chuff and come over to see us. Now, you know, cats are not dogs. And for cats, life is on their terms. And so most days he'll be excited to see his caretakers, and he'll come over and say hello. Other days he would ignore us completely. That's just how a cat is.
Did you ever feel endangered by him?
All the time. This is a wild animal. These are not pets. We had to be extremely careful. People that every year in this country, you read about someone that forgot that their pet lion or tiger or cougar or something like that was not at all a domestic animal and ended up very seriously injured or killed. So yes, we took that very, very seriously. And I was bitten a few times over the years by the tigers. And I mean, it's a very serious thing.
What precautions do you take?
Well, there's engineering standards, of course, the type of caging that keeps him separate from us. But most important was a mindset. Standard operating procedure and a mindset to keep us separated from him at all times. For example, when I first became Mike's veterinarian, I would sometimes go home at night and I'd wonder, now, did I lock that lock? Did I lock that gate? And so I developed a standard operating procedure whereby if I went over and checked on him, which I did probably every other to every third day, I would require myself to go around and physically touch every lock to make sure it was closed. So that when I walked away from that facility, I knew that that facility was secure and I wouldn't wake up at 2 a.m. wondering if I had to go back down there and check to make sure the locks were locked. So a lot of that safety just comes from awareness and a mindset of safety with these animals. And just remembering, this is not a pet.
Now you have a section in the book where you talk about an episode where one of the mics escaped one time.
Mike 4. Mm-hmm.
And what happened? It was a student prank. They cut open the
box. Yeah, it was some drunken students from Tulane who the night before the LSU Tulane football game that decided that they wanted to steal a 525-pound apex predator. And he was the most dangerous tiger we'd ever had, the largest and the most aggressive, Mike 4. And fortunately, they came to their senses and realized that that really was not a good idea. But unfortunately, they had already cut the locks to his old enclosure and then they left. And so he was able to get out and wandered over onto the Bernie Moore track field. And my predecessor, Dr. Sheldon Bivin, was called in to put a couple of darts in him and get him back into his enclosure.
And so it all worked out at the end. I mean, he was.
Well, I suppose. Oh, yeah. I mean, he didn't die, and nobody else did either. So, but you know, the idea that somebody would come in and cut the locks and release a 500-pound apex predator. I mean, that's a serious thing.
Yeah, it's a lot more dangerous than a green wave, I guess.
Whatever that is.
Yes. Okay, let me get to those questions. Some of these are from the book. And we're talking about Mike here. What does Mike eat?
Cats are carnivores. So they eat meat. So he eats a meat-based diet. It's a commercial diet. It's actually made in Nebraska. And it's made out of, it's made at a cattle slaughterhouse. It consists of meat, fish, vegetables, vitamins, soy, minerals, and LSU puts extra vitamin E in his food every day and vitamin B complex once a week. 80 plus years of feeding these animals had taught us that those are good supplements to add. And so he eats between about 10 and 30 pounds of that a day, depending on the time of year and the particular tiger. Mike 5 was the smallest of the tigers that I cared for. He was about 370 pounds, and he actually ate more than Mike's 6 and 7, who were much larger animals.
So staff come in, they put it someplace where he knows to go? And
oh, yeah, at night, okay. In his night house. He's fed in the same place every night in his night house.
Mm-hmm. And so it's that one big meal a day. Like, he doesn't have breakfast.
No. Most carnivores are what are called gorge feeders. They gorge themselves. A tiger can eat up to 80 pounds of meat in one meal, and then he might not eat for several days. Mm-hmm. So they're gorge feeders. They take advantage of a kill. When they kill something, they need to eat as much of it as possible before somebody else comes by and takes it.
Okay. Another question. Yeah, I think you've partially answered it, though, but is Mike ever given the chance to hunt and kill live prey?
No. No, we don't. That's largely instinctive, but we don't want him to get good at that, because if he ever got out, you know, that could be a real problem. And also, you know, it's fine for the tiger if we put a live animal in there, but it's not so good for that animal. Yeah. So over the years, we would feed him pigs and chickens, but they were always dead, fresh, dead, humanely euthanized pigs or chickens. And he really enjoyed those, but no, he was never allowed to kill prey.
And so now he has his own buffet every night, so he really doesn't need to go out and do that.
That's right. It's like meals on wheels.
All right. Do Mike's caretakers brush his teeth?
No, that is not likely to be possible with a wild animal like a tiger. And he is provided an ox tail that we just would purchase from the butcher store once a week. And that has a lot of fiber on it, you know, ligament type fiber. And he chews on that, and that keeps his teeth pretty clean. We've never really had an issue with plaque formation. Although, which kind of surprises me, because dental problems are the number one cause of death in both wild and captive tigers. Though typically it's because as they age, their teeth get brittle and they'll bite on something, a rock in the wild or a bar in captivity, and they'll break a tooth, and then they'll get an infection that either causes them to become septic and they die, or they'll lose a tooth because of it. And if the infection goes into their jaw, they'll develop a fracture of their jaw. So we were always very, very careful about their teeth. But no, there was no need to brush them.
That'd be a hard job to give someone, you know.
We it really would.
And brush the tiger's teeth. Yeah. And so just the process of his chewing that kind of takes care of
but yes.
Good. Does Mike purr, or does he meow?
Large cats don't meow. They do this that chuff that I mentioned. That's sort of analogous. And so there's a chuff, a moan, a growl, and a roar. Those are the four sounds that tigers make. And so the chuff, or the Preston, is a happy sound of greeting, analogous to a domestic cat meowing.
Is the tiger's roar as loud as the lion's roar? I mean, a lion.
Yeah, sure. Really, they're about the same size animal. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that right there would scare people away just hearing that roar.
You have no idea.
Yeah.
You have no idea. When we had the old cinder block small tiger house, night house, and I would try to force Mike into the trailer occasionally to take him to the veterinary school for some, Mike 5, for some medical procedure, and he would start attacking the chain link fencing that I was pushing on to get him to go in the trailer. He would start attacking that and roaring, and my face was about 8 to 10 inches away from his in a small cinder block building, slightly larger than a closet. You have no idea how terrifying that roar is.
I can imagine. That sounds right there.
I had a full head of hair when I came to LSU, and Mike roared that away.
Right. Do Mike's caretakers give him baths?
No, he bathes himself in his swimming pool. We can't go. That would require us to go into the space with him and physically touch him and bathe him.
Yeah.
That's not possible. This is not a domestic animal. We cannot be in the same space with the tiger.
Yeah. I would imagine too. Is Mike neutered or declawed?
No, there's no reason to do either of those.
Really?
Yeah, why would we? I mean, we're not worried about him clawing anybody because we keep separation.
Okay.
And there's no reason to neuter him because we're not going to breed him.
All right. Does Mike have a scratching post like a house cat?
Yes. He's got an oak tree in his yard that he uses and several oak stumps. It's called oak downfall that he pulls his claws on. That's very important for him. Mike 5 wants the oak stump that was in his yard, his enclosure, fell over. And for some reason, when it fell over, he wouldn't use it. And so one of his claws overgrew and grew into his paw. It was very, very painful. And I had to heavily sedate him and trim that claw with a pair of bolt cutters.
Wow. Okay. Does Mike get too hot in the summer?
Does he have
air conditioning?
He doesn't have access to his night house during the day. So if it's hot outside, he's out there in his yard. But that's why he has that waterfall. There's a pool at the bottom of the waterfall. He's got his stream, and he's got a large pool at the bottom of the stream. So he can get into that pool anytime he wants to stay cool.
I guess the similar answer to the next question, does he get cold in the winter?
In the winter, he grows a very thick coat, and his night house is heated at night. And as I said, if it drops below 40 degrees and it's either snowing or there's cold rain coming down, he's given access to his night house. But even then, rarely will he go into the night house. His coat is so thick that he'll just tend to stay outside. I mean, I've seen him get into his swimming pool when it was 40 degrees.
I guess there's a former student here who writes, Mike always seems to be sleeping when I visit him. What is that?
Well, as I said, they sleep 16 hours a day.
Okay.
So the chances of going by and seeing him asleep are pretty high.
And it could be during the day, if not just at night.
Oh, yeah. They sleep mostly during the day. They're nocturnal animals. Mm-hmm. They do most of their hunting at night. So, yeah, they sleep. The daytime is for sleeping. The best time to see him is first thing in the morning when he's released out into his yard, or in the evening at around 5 to 6, because he's awake, because he knows that any minute now his veterinary student caretakers are going to arrive to feed him dinner. So he's typically awake in the late afternoon, but during the middle of the day, he's often asleep.
Is Mike bothered by crowds?
There were several features of the tiger that I looked for when I selected a tiger. And one of them was tolerance for and even desire for human interaction. And so I intentionally selected tigers that were very, very interactive and were not going to be hiding in the back of the enclosure under some bush because there were 1,000 people out there in front of his enclosure. So no, these tigers that we have had, there no doubt are tigers that are bothered by crowds, but the tigers that we have intentionally selected are not. That's in part why they were selected.
Yeah, I think you mentioned somewhere in the book that he seems to enjoy looking at the people.
Yeah, yeah.
Does Mike get bored?
Obviously, I don't know, but we don't think so, because typically when animals get bored, they develop what are called stereotypies. They're unhealthy behaviors that they do out of boredom. He does not have any stereotypies, and also he would, we could tell by his medical condition, and that he would develop clinical evidence of stress, and he doesn't. Also, his enclosure was designed to be interesting, both for him and for people viewing him. So it's an unusual, irregular shape. There's a different view from every location within the yard. He's got his swimming pool, his stream, the waterfall, the vegetation. He's got a ball he can play with. The students will often put other things out there for him to play with, you know, a pumpkin around Thanksgiving. He loves those watermelons in the summer. They'll make goat's milk sort of popsicles for him. They'll hide those out in his yard. They put scents with an S-S-C-E-N-T-S, scents out in his yard. He hunts, he looks for those. Those are very interesting to him. So we worked very hard to make his environment enriched and interesting. And there's a lot of people to watch. There's a lot going on that campus, sure, especially right next door to the track. So he spends a lot of time watching people that are watching him.
Have many of the mics been female?
None.
Does Mike know his name?
It's hard to know. It's hard to know whether he recognizes just the his caretaker's voices, or if he equates a certain sound meaning his name with himself. It's just, there's no way to know.
Does Mike ride around in Tiger Stadium anymore, like before an LSU game?
Not anymore. It was probably, I don't remember exactly the year, but it's probably about 10 years ago that we stopped doing that. It was apparent to us that once the athletic department started launching fireworks right next to his trailer, the very next week he wouldn't load, and we would not force him. We never forced him to go to a football game. You cannot drug him. That is a violation of the Federal Animal Welfare Act, and we wouldn't do that anyway. Our number one concern was Mike's care and well-being. And so when he stopped loading, I informed the athletic department that I think he stopped loading because these fireworks were being launched. And it wasn't the explosion of the fireworks. He didn't even flinch. It was the whoosh when they were launched. All animals know that predators make low-frequency sounds. And so when the low frequency sound of those fireworks being launched really bothered him. And so he's just stopped loading. And so I informed the athletic department. They opted to continue the fireworks display. And so that was it. Mike stopped loading. And after a certain number of failed attempts to get him to load, we just said, you know, it's pretty obvious that it's in his best interest that we just stop this tradition. And that started a real firestorm. I mean, I had people calling and emailing from around the country complaining about my intellect, my abilities as a veterinarian. I mean, there's some pretty nasty comments, but there was never anything special about me as a person or as a veterinarian to take care of the tiger. But I can tell you one critical feature that Mike the Tiger's veterinarian must have is the ability to say no and mean it and to not care what other people think. Mike's welfare is the only thing that mattered to me. And so there, for a time, there were a lot of complaints, but I just didn't care.
I would think even without the fireworks, it must have been horrifying for him to be brought into the trailer.
Well,
the crowd and yet noise, he, and noise and everything else, with all the LSU noise.
And yet he loaded voluntarily, knowing completely full well what was coming. These are very intelligent animals. So he knew, I say he, all the mics I worked with, they knew exactly what was going to happen, yet they loaded voluntarily. And that gets back to having selected the right tigers.
Right. And so once the fireworks started, they knew not to load.
He just wouldn't.
Okay.
He didn't want any part of that.
Well, does Mike make any public appearances at all outside of his habitat? Like, there's a question about why doesn't he go to Mardi Gras parades and other social events?
Yeah, many years ago, Mike used to be taken to Mardi Gras events. He hated those. His behavior showed that. And, you know, there's so much traffic out on the roads right now. It's very, very dangerous to take that, to take the tiger out on the road. I mean, there's, I mentioned in the book three times, I think, where there was an accident with the trailer, and a couple times where the trailer was flipped over. And one time when the back door came off, when Mike was in it, I think it was Mike 3, if I recall correctly, but it might've been one of the others. There's just too much traffic out there. It's just not, it's not in the tiger's best interest to go out on the road.
So if you want to see Mike, you got to go to his house at the right time.
That's right.
Just look. He calls the shots on when he can be seen.
That's right.
And were you, I don't know if this was at the time you were at LSU, that not far from Baton Rouge along the highway, there was a place, it was a, like a gas station, something called the gas station.
Tiger truck stop.
Yeah, yeah. And if I recall, that tiger was just like in a cage outside.
Yes, he was.
And there was, I mean, they've gotten rid of it since then. But was there any reaction to that? Or?
Oh, there was. That owner was under constant pressure from members of the public to eliminate that that enclosure. I received calls regularly asking to comment on that situation. I never did. Nobody at the university had given me the authority to represent the university's position on that. So I was very careful about that. I will tell you that at one point, before we had our new enclosure, that truck stop tiger had something that our tiger didn't, and that was grass. That tiger was on grass and ours was on concrete. So that gentleman took, I think he took good care of his tigers, but it was pretty hard to see a tiger in a cage that small.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody, because you stop at the gas station as a tiger, you go see the tiger, but I don't think anybody enjoyed the sight. I mean, I think those questions always came up. Whereas it sounds
I wouldn't say nobody enjoyed it, but he was under a lot of pressure from the public to get rid of that exhibit.
Did you ever have any other interaction with other universities that had tiger mascots, like Clemson, for example?
Never had a tiger. There's only been one other university that's had a tiger, and that was the University of Tennessee at Memphis. And they had a full brother for a while. There's a called Tom, Tiger of Memphis. They had a full brother of Mike 5 from a subsequent litter, but the same parents. But that tiger was actually owned by one of their boosters. He was kept off campus and only brought to university activities by the booster. And so LSU has always been the only university that owned and had a tiger on their own campus. There are, to answer your question, yes, some years ago, a little group started that consisted of university mascot caretakers. There are 56 universities in the United States that have live animal mascots. Most of them are dogs and horses. Interestingly, most of those animals are not owned by their universities. They're owned by a family or an individual that has a contractual agreement with the university to bring the animal to events. I was the only veterinarian in that group that was responsible for one of those animals. But yeah, there are just over 50 of them. There are also just over 50 universities that have the tiger as a mascot. But of course, now LSU is the only one that has a live tiger. So the Clemson Tigers, the Auburn Tigers, there's the University of Rochester Tigers. I mean, there's Doan University here in Nebraska, the Tigers. I mean, there's a bunch of them. They've never had a tiger.
When was the last time you saw Mike?
A few days before I left Louisiana in September of 2022.
So do you think if you go back there now, he'd recognize you? Or
absolutely. No question. I saw during the 26 years I cared for the tiger, often one of the tiger's former caretakers, now a veterinarian, would come back to visit, and he or she would go see Mike, and the tiger, if that was the tiger that they took care of, that tiger recognized them immediately. It was absolutely no question about it. It didn't matter how many years it had been. They are very intelligent animals. They do not forget people.
It's amazing. So, well, this book is, I think it's fascinating. This is David G. Baker, who's a veterinarian who was for many years worked at LSU, and his responsibilities was also overseeing the care of Mike the Tiger. So it's an interesting story, just a lot of interesting science. And as you say, it's out now into the bookstores, and it's at the, and I guess it's on the web things and everything. So you should be able to do it. And it's well done. It's very, very nice. So thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. Nice talking to you.
It's been a delightful conversation. And may we see the Tigers in one of the bowl games by the end of the season. So never be sure. But anyway, okay, thank you very much.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Louisiana Insider. Subscribe, like, and rate our show where you listen to your podcasts, and follow us on social media at Louisiana Life Mag. Executive producer for Louisiana Insider is Kelly Massico, in cooperation with Louisiana Life Magazine. For subscription information to Louisiana Life, call 504-828-1380. Our theme music was provided by Rich Collins. Hey, that's me. Join us again next week for more discoveries inside Louisiana.